All right, our next case for this morning is Cooper Scott against Visteon Automotive. Mr. Sutherland.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, I will go right to the argument unless the panel has some questions about the basic facts. Tanya Cooper Scott was hired by Visteon May 22, 2000. On September 11, 2000, she was constructively discharged when she resigned. Paul Giroud teaches us that Title VII prohibitions include creating, condoning, and tolerating a hostile work environment. And in fact, Judge Barker cites to that in her summary judgment rule. Visteon was a cauldron of racial hatred and bigotry when Tanya Cooper Scott came to work there. One of the people that certified this, so to speak, was Bruce Mantell, a supervisor, and he states in a report, quote, "A lot of people here don't like minorities. They're hillbillies and hold to old ideas like white supremacy." And he makes that statement September 11, 2000. Mr. Goins, who had been there 26-plus years, and Mr. Van Cleve, who had retired after working there almost the same number of years, in their affidavits, they describe a background and an environment of racial hostility, evidenced by graffiti of the word nigger on public places and on walls, on KKK. And in fact, Mr. Goins warned Tanya that there was KKK, Klan activity, at the plant.
Now, in terms of the KKK being scratched on the employee's car and the other employees who said there was racially derogatory graffiti, did the management have notice of that?
Your Honor, they did. According to the affidavits, Mr. Goins, on several occasions, brought it to Mr. Don Vincent that many of the individuals had been subjected to racial derogatory remarks, and most of this graffiti was in very public places, like bathrooms, on walls. And in
fact, what about the KKK, though, that Judge Williams just asked about? Because that's, of course, an extremely serious allegation for Mr. Goins to make. And if the record showed the employer had been told that this had been scratched on the employee's car or painted or whatever it was, then one would want to know, you know, what steps did the employer take? But what does the record show about notice of that particular incident?
The record about scratching the KKK on an individual employee's car, I think, is silent as to whether or not management, or at least upper management, knew about it.
So then for our purposes, we have to assume they didn't know.
I don't know about that, but what I can say is that the HR people in their testimony said that they did investigate two incidences in which KKK appears. That is, Mrs. Jennifer Stewart investigated when she was both an intern and when she was, in fact, employed.
Right, these were earlier incidents that were
during the same time frame, though. During the same time frame, 1999 and 2000. So if you look at the history, this is not just starting up. In fact,
when you say same time frame, though, I mean, the issue, one of the important issues in this case, and it's a bigger issue about some of the incidents than others, of course, is to what extent was management alerted to the fact that the environment in this place was one which was hostile for African-American women. And, you know, I understand that there's essentially this sort of joint category issue here, but on the other hand, some of your evidence understandably relates to racially offensive incidents like the KKK. I'm sure African-American men would find that just as offensive as African-American women, and for that matter, everybody else. But anyhow, we need to know, what did management know, because this is crucial for knowing whether its response was reasonable under the circumstances.
Well, here's what we do know. Van Cleve and Goins both said that they reported numerous instances to Don Vincent, who's the HR manager, during the same time frame. We also know that...
When you say... could you define time frame so that I know what you mean?
Well, according to the affidavits, that Mr. Goins remembers talking to Don Vincent prior to 2000, I believe, about four or five incidences in which he brought to Mr. Don Vincent's attention events in which individual employees had been the object of racial derogatory comments. He also says in his affidavit that during that same time frame, constructive notice or whatever you want to call it, there were 30 or 40 incidences in public bathrooms and on walls in which graffiti depicting the word nigger or KKK were in evidence. He also said...
But your opponent criticizes this evidence as being really too vague to be of any particular use for the question whether Ms. Cooper Scott herself, in the somewhat later time frame, she begins work May 22nd of 2000 and resigns around the 11th of September. It's just too vague.
They say that it's too vague, but they cannot identify a single individual that's ever been disciplined or even identified as the author of any of this graffiti or even the caricature, which says on the...
we have it in the brief.
Which says, you know, that nigger bitch, why don't you learn? There were three authors that contributed to that, that caricature, and nobody pulled it down, nobody reported it, and when it was brought to management's attention, they said, well, what shall we do about it? And then the question, of course, is whether this is a reasonable response by management.
Well, yeah, exactly, and I think that's a very serious incident, and I'm perfectly willing to focus on whether management at that point responded appropriately. They went out and hired the handwriting expert. They interviewed people. They said they weren't able to pin it down to one individual, but then in the middle of all of this, Ms. Cooper Scott resigned.
Well, she resigned before they hired the person who was supposed to do the handwriting analysis.
But it was only a few days later.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's only 6 or 7 days later that she resigned. And
well, that's true. But she asked. She had a specific request. Can you protect me? Can you guarantee my safety? And she had this conversation with Jennifer Stewart. And it was, according to Mrs. Tanya Cooper Scott's recollection, Mrs. Stewart was actually tearful when she replied that she could not. There had been a history. In other words, beginning about mid-July up through September the 6th and then September the 9th, there were a number of confrontations in which Mr. Field says, I don't like women, and women don't like me. So you got sex there. There's the slut word, which they denied finding any evidence, conclusive evidence of, even though Mr. Michael Blanchard said, I heard Mr. John Warren say it.
But what's an employer supposed to do if a report like that comes in and they interview all the relevant people who might have been around at the time, and they can't pin it down to anything? I'm quite aware that there can be conspiracies of silence and the like, but it's also unacceptable in our system to go around punishing people for things that they didn't do. You know, you have to have some reason to discipline, and they apparently did try to take educative steps.
Well, that's true. There's a number of approaches, and you're absolutely correct, Judge Woods, that if the employer does things reasonable, that's what we attack. They sent the most inexperienced person out there to do the interviews. The interviews were sort of so clumsy and inept that almost anybody out of grade school could have done a better job if they'd been educated in their high school civics class. The second thing is that there was some evidence, according to their expert, that indicated that two individuals, perhaps Fields and...
You're talking about the poster now. I was back on the slut remark. But anyway...
What can they do? The slut remark?
The problem is when they go out and they try to do an investigation and they can't find out, it's tough to criticize them for not disciplining somebody. And I don't think you should give up at that point either, but discipline isn't really an option, is it?
Well, putting a poster on the board...
The poster is different. They have the two people, perhaps, that they narrow it down to.
Zero tolerance does not inoculate the workplace against bigotry and racial hatred. And in fact, that's really all they did. Mr. Goins says he'd been there 26 years, and in terms of the production workers, that's the first time in 2002 that he'd ever had any training with regard to racial harassment or sexual harassment. They do admit that they did some for salaried people. That's up here. We're talking about lower level people. And there's also things which employers are constantly using, which whether I agree with or not, and that's the the lie detector. And in fact, you can't say, okay, we don't know if you did it exactly, but we're going to watch you. And none of that really occurred. And in fact, the other alternative was to transfer, to put her in a more safe place. She requested, actually, they requested she move to a metallurgy and quality control position because she was doing such a wonderful job saving the money. They rejected that. The next time she wanted to move to a different department, and it wasn't any particular reason except she wanted to get out of where she was. And she didn't alert them to any particular problems because she was trying to work through them. But the third time she spoke to Mr. Don Vincent, and he acknowledges this, and that's an uncontested fact, that she wanted to be transferred. And then the fourth time is when she spoke with Ms. Jennifer Stewart in the conduct of this September investigation. So what could they have done? They could have done a better job of investigating. They could have brought the two people who were suspects into a room and had a further examination to see whether or not they were involved in this. None of that was done. And in fact, they could have called her back. But because she wasn't convinced that they could protect her, remember, she'd been injured once, and she had another tray thrown at her, and she had a large bin pushed at her by an out-of-control, angry worker by the name of Augustine, and none of management intervened, none of management assisted in disciplining any of these people. So we believe if you look at the totality, as is required under Harris versus Fort Worth Systems, that Mrs. Tanya Cooper Scott was denied the benefit of the controlling case law.
Now, like that tray incident being thrown at her, she advised Benson of it, but did she make any suggestion that it had to do with race or sex?
She did not. She did not, because at the time she did not have enough information to make those conclusions, and she thought it was an accident. But later on, she did say that she thought that based upon the information she'd been provided by two co-workers, and looking at the physical relationship between where the tray was up above and where she was standing, it could not have been dropped accidentally, as the individual said he did. And that's because it looked like it was thrown in her direction.
And then did she go back to Benson then to explain that?
In the conference that she had towards the end of September, or August rather, she discussed all these things with Mr. Benson, and he acknowledges that. And it's an uncontested fact, I think, of item 60. Thank you, if I may.
Okay, we'll let you save what you have. Ms. Misa? Good morning. Let me just follow up on one of the last questions, which was, did Ms. Cooper Scott go back to Mr. Vincent and tell him any more about the tray incident and her conclusion that it was somehow a racial or sexual incident? She did not. The record does not support that she ever did. There's a little bit of deposition testimony that she mentioned the tray incident to Mr. Vincent, a tray incident, and no further testimony at all of what she said to him. So there is no evidence she ever brought to the employer's attention that she thought either tray incident had anything to do with her race or her sex.
Well, she did request to move out of the area after the poster incident, and wasn't that reasonable for her to be moved somewhere else while it was being investigated? And can't we look at that fact that she was not moved as an indication that the company was negligent in remedying the situation?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, because that is in the record about this request for transfer after the poster incident, there's no time frame. There's just a very conclusory statement in Ms. Cooper Scott's affidavit that after the poster, no date, she asked for transfer. It doesn't say who she asked for transfer from or when she did it. So we don't
That's
know.
That's enough, isn't it? I mean, you, both the district court, I think, mistakenly, and we've tried to make this more clear in some more recent opinions, says, quote, self-serving statements in one's affidavit are never enough. Well, that's an overstatement. If you are saying something in an affidavit about something you did personally, you don't need corrupt. We don't have like the old common law, you know, party witness rules. You can say, I asked for a transfer, and that's evidence that you asked for a transfer. Somebody else might say, no, you never did, and then you'd have a credibility dispute or something of the sort, or maybe it didn't make it into the personnel file. Again, weight of the evidence, but if she personally testifies that those are the words that came out of her mouth, that's good enough.
I agree with Your Honor on the point that her statement, whatever she said about the transfer and affidavit, that she said that's properly in evidence. The problem is there's not enough there for you to make any conclusion on it. All she says is she made a request for transfer
sometime after the poster incident. She doesn't say who she made it to. She says it's not clear if she made it to anyone who had any authority to do anything about it, or when she made it in relation to when she quit. She quit before they were barely started into the investigation. She didn't wait long enough for them to act, and there is no evidence of who she made that request to that they would even, you know, would be somebody who could even have done something about it, or that she gave them time to even consider that. We have no idea.
So then there was no evidence that anybody at Vistacom received this comment from her, or was told about this request.
That's right. There's one paragraph in her affidavit where she says she made the request, and she doesn't say to who, and she doesn't say to when, when it happened.
Now, your employees admit that they knew about some racially derogatory graffiti at the plant. Is there any evidence that anybody was ever disciplined for such racially derogatory graffiti?
No, there is not, Your Honor. And I know there were some questions during counsel's argument about what's really in the record on the racial graffiti, because obviously racial graffiti is a very serious situation. First, let me address what the plaintiff knew about, and then I'll address the other evidence that she was not aware of. First of all, it's very important to recognize there's this claim that racial graffiti abounded in the workplace. Well, one wonders how that can be true when Ms. Cooper Scott didn't know about this. The only evidence in the record of anything Ms. Cooper Scott knew about any racial graffiti in the workplace was the poster she found just a couple days before she quit. The only other evidence is that an employee told her, Mr. Goines, that KKK was scratched into a car. That's it. There's no evidence that actually happened because it's hearsay. We don't have Mr. Goines' testimony that he saw it or told it. If you look at Mr. Goines' affidavit, he doesn't mention that incident. So we don't even have proof the incident happened. All we have in the record is her claim that Mr. Goines told her. And very importantly, she never told anyone. There is no record, and there is no evidence in this record she ever told anyone about that, and she's a supervisor. First we hear about this is in the litigation in this case. So there's no evidence that happened, and there's no evidence in the record that management was aware of it. Mr. Goines doesn't even say it in his affidavit. If you look at Mr. Goines' affidavit, it's very conclusory. He says that there were 30, 40 examples of graffiti.
But doesn't he indicate, though, that he had complained? I guess here's the scenario that worried me. If that incident of the scratching occurs over a holiday weekend when it was over Memorial Day weekend, right, wasn't it?
There's no evidence as to when this occurred. The only evidence in the record as to Mr. Goines telling Ms. Cooper Scott that a minority employee's car had that scratched into it was her testimony that happened sometime early in her employment. There is no other evidence about when it happened. What you may be thinking of, what's in the record, Your Honor, is there is evidence from two human resources or labor relations employees that there were some incidents where people complained about graffiti, there was some graffiti, and they went out and investigated it. They couldn't find who had done it, but it's not clear whether these are the same or different ones. But what is clear from that testimony is that they reacted to it, and they tried to find out who did the behavior.
Right, and the question, I suppose, is the adequacy of their reaction, because one way to react is to just go out in a very targeted way and ask around and have everybody say it wasn't me. Another way, you know, would be perhaps to have more security cameras around or greater control of areas of the workplace where the graffiti was found or other measures. And it did sound to me like it was rather late in the day that the hourly employees were educated on the company's policies with regard to harassment. Certainly, you can't just stop at salaried employees.
And Your Honor, I think what you have to do is look at what's really in the record about whether there was racial graffiti in the workplace. Again, all Ms. Cooper Scott knew about is someone telling her something had happened, no proof it actually happened, and the poster she found just a couple days, and then she quit before they could even finish dealing with it. The only other evidence in the record is Mr. Goines' affidavit, which I welcome you to look at the affidavit. All it says is in very generic terms, there are no specifics that he witnessed racial graffiti. We don't even know if it was racial. There is no content to the affidavit. And he makes a very conclusory allegation that he told Mr. Vincent, the human resources manager, about racial graffiti. We don't even know with those conclusions what it said. It might not have even been racial. Just someone making that conclusion isn't enough. There's no date on this. It's pure conclusion. If you look at Mr. Van Cleve's affidavit, his affidavit refers to one incident of the N-word being written on a cabinet. He places it you can't even tell if it was during Ms. Cooper Scott's employment. He said it was from 98 to 2000, sometime in that time frame, this one incident. And then his only other evidence is that he heard one employee insult another employee because of race and some generic references to knowing about remarks. It's all very vague, and I would also mention as to the Van Cleve affidavit that Mr. Van Cleve was not identified on the Rule 26 initial disclosures in this case, and we objected on that basis that you can't come in on summary judgment, add a witness in that you've never identified pursuant to the federal rules of civil procedure that apply in this case. The affidavit should be disregarded, but it doesn't give you any real evidence. These are exactly the type of conclusory affidavit that this court has said we're not going to rely on to create a disputed issue of fact in a summary judgment motion. They are very conclusory. You can't tell what really happened, when things happened, based on these affidavits. This is a case, like many employment discrimination cases, where an employee is claiming that she was harassed, where most of the incidents aren't even racial or sexual. She didn't complain about most of the incidents. On a few cases when she did complain, she didn't even mention that she thought they were racial or sexual. And
well, maybe that's the point, because people sometimes avoid overt racism or sexism or combined racism and sexism. But if she had said, you know, I think that I'm being disrespected in this supervisory position because of my race and sex, that would be a different situation, don't you think? I mean, sometimes, you know, a female supervisor will have problems with male subordinates, and they're not always stupid enough to come up and say, I don't take orders from women. But if that's the way they're behaving, she might go and make a complaint anyway.
Right, but if she thought they were because of her race or sex, she had the obligation to give the employer some information for them to conclude
that's
that.
Wouldn't that be a different case?
That's exactly right, because employees can be insubordinate, and we know it happens all the time in every type of workplace, not just factories, and just because she's an African-American female doesn't mean that's why it was happening. And if she doesn't tell her employer some information for them to conclude that, how's the employer supposed to conclude that? And if you look at most of the events, other than the poster and other than her saying that a group leader supposedly rhymed her name with the word slut, virtually everything is devoid of sexual or racial context, you know, other than, you know, employees gossiping about two employees having an affair. This court has held that kind of conduct isn't sexual harassment. You know, employees saying like things like that in the workplace about apparently there was something happening in the workplace.
In terms of that slut comment, I just want to make sure I have the timing right. The comment was made, but she didn't raise it until 3 months later.
That is
before Labor Day. Is that right?
That's correct. The evidence in the record is that she didn't hear the comment.
Right.
It's secondhand. That another employee told her that Mr. Warren had said it, and that this had happened very early in her employment. She didn't report it 3 months later. But when she reported it, it was immediately investigated. Everyone who was in the meeting was interviewed, and they all said it did not happen. And she did wait 3 months to report that. But when she did report it, even though it was 3 months later, they took prompt remedial action. On the poster, it's the same thing. There is counsel indicated that somehow this poster was hanging up and no one took it down. There, I ask you to look at the record. There is nothing in the record to suggest that. All the record shows is that she found it on the evening of about 5:30 on September 5th. That 9:30 in the morning, she called Mr. Vincent, the human resources manager.
But didn't she leave? It was on the refrigerator, right? And didn't she?
I think something like refrigerator. Pardon me?
Did she choose to leave it up, or did she take it down for the night?
I think she took it down, actually. And again, I'm not remembering exactly the record, but your memory is the same as mine. That she, because she took it, because then they asked her to bring it in.
Mr. Vincent.
And she went to Mr. Vincent, and she talked in the very next morning. She came in that day. They interviewed her that day. They took her out to the area that day. They started, and they then directed people to do an investigation that day. The investigation started the next day, continued for about a week in terms of interviews. They then got a handwriting expert, and there's more, but Ms. Cooper Scott quit. She didn't even give them a chance to finish this. And even though she quit, they still didn't stop. They went ahead and they finished the handwriting expert. We have an expert who says, there might be some similarities, but I can't tell who did this. And I think, Your Honor, you said you can't discipline employees without a basis to do so.
But it is such a serious thing, this poster, that it's hard for me to believe that once the handwriting expert says, I can't tell if it's Smith or Jones, if you will, you just say, oh, well, so I guess we don't know, you know, that you don't somehow investigate further or do something to try to pin it down. You wouldn't have an employee at a workplace that engages in this kind of behavior is terrible.
What they did was not only did they do talk to everyone in the plant about this type of behavior and it wouldn't be tolerated, they specifically went and talked to, because again, they don't know who did this, but they went to talk to the people that she had been complaining about, who she never tied into race or sex, and who had never had any complaint against them made of racial or sexual conduct, and they sat down with each of those persons and talked to them to make sure they knew they could not do this. And I submit that the employer is not the FBI, and that their conduct was extremely reasonable with regard to what was a serious event, the poster. And they continued it long after she quit, and she didn't wait for them to take action to finish their investigation, potentially transfer her if they couldn't find out who did it, or if they could. She left, and I submit the law did not allow her to do that, that she cannot make a constructive discharge claim on this record where it doesn't even meet the hostile work environment standard, much less the aggravated circumstances, the I have no choice to quit circumstances that the law requires. Employee needs to stay in their job before they quit.
Okay. Questions? Anything else? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll hear again from Mr. Sutherland. 3 minutes left, Mr. Sutherland.
My statement that the notice was left up is correct because three people came along and added to it. And so since it remained there until Tanya took it down, it remained there, even though other people walked by it and saw it. At least three people walked by it because they added to it. So I stand by that. The second thing is that she did, and the affidavit says so, she did speak specifically in August with Mr. Vincent about moving. And she did say generally that she spoke about wanting to be moved when they could not ensure her safety. Now, I go back to what was raised both directly and implicitly by the questions. What did they do was reasonable? There is not anything in the record that this event or any other event resulted in any discipline of anybody over the entire history that we're talking about racial epitaphs, we're talking about KKK graffiti. Mr. Goen said there's been no discipline. Mr. Van Cleef said there was no discipline. Tanya said there was no discipline. And as proof, they go out and they say, she didn't wait around till we're finished. Well, indeed, she didn't have to because she already knew that nothing was going to happen. Jennifer Stewart said, I can't guarantee your safety. Now, the very obvious thing is that, as I say, if you're doing interrogation, police do it all the time, maybe they're not that well equipped. But when you only have Jennifer Stewart doing it, you're not going to get any kind of result. It's predictable. These are jury questions. All these questions that I hear coming from the panel, both directed to me and opposing counsel, suggest that these are jury questions. And if this is de novo, we respectfully submit that Judge Barker was incorrect in her ruling and finding for summary judgment on all the issues. If it is co-worker, hostile work environment, then there is a burden on the defendant to show that they behave reasonably. But the standard is to show that they were negligent, and we believe that they were negligent. If it is supervisors contributing to the hostile work environment, and we believe under Hagerud that that implies that people who are acquiescing in or cooperating in or tolerating, then that's part of it. We've identified three or four people that were supervisors with Tanya that did not interfere, did not intervene when she was put at risk physically. When one of the people who put her physically at rest says, I don't like women, and he got up in her face and threatened her, and he continued to do that until Mr. Warren came along. That happened another time with Mr. Augustine, who pushed the bench. Nobody did any discipline. Isn't that what we're talking about? Reasonable responses to very specific and graphic and threatening gestures? No response. And to me, that is creating what we are talking about here, the hostile work environment. If In fact, if coworker or the supervisors were participating in condoning or acquiescing in this hostile work environment or contributing to it by their not doing a reasonable thing, we maintain under the current trolling case law that the employer is vicariously liable and that we don't even need to go beyond that. The hostile work environment created one option for Tanya Cooper Scott when she saw that caricature, because that's when it all came out. That's when she explained everything that had been going on, and that's in the record. What I believe should have happened is that there should have been some protection guaranteed or put her in a different department as she had requested. That would have been reasonable. Since we don't have that, we believe that she has demonstrated and met her burden of proof that it was a hostile work environment. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement.